The Catcher Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a really heavy subject, one that often feels, well, almost impossible to solve. Corruption.
Yeah, it's everywhere, isn't it? And it feels so entrenched.
Exactly. But we're going to get a clearer picture using Robert Afrapberg's book, Anti-Corruption. The idea is to sort of fast-track our understanding of why it's such a global problem, but also, importantly, how we might actually fight back.
And that's the crucial bit, isn't it? The fight back part. Because, you know, when you talk about corruption, the default reaction is often cynicism. People say, oh, it's just how things are, or it's part of the culture.
Right, that inevitability argument.
Rodberg completely rejects that. He basically throws that idea out the window.
Okay, so if it's not just people being immoral or some deep cultural flaw, what is corruption according to Rodberg?
He's very clear on this. It is absolutely not an unavoidable cultural trait. He reframes it entirely. For him, corruption is a systemic political and economic problem. Think of it like faulty plumbing in the state.
Faulty plumbing. Okay, I like that analogy.
Yeah, it's an engineering problem, a governance challenge. And the key takeaway is that because it's systemic, it can be combated. It can be significantly reduced. It's solvable.
And the stakes, I mean, they're incredibly high. Rodberg doesn't mince words. He calls corruption the single greatest obstacle to economic and social development.
He really does. He describes it as this massive hidden tax, and it's a regressive one. It hits the poor the hardest.
That framing really changes things. It makes this deep dive feel essential, you know? It's about global well-being, not just policy talk.
Definitely. And to understand why his view carries so much weight, you need to know a bit about Rodberg himself. He's a very distinguished academic, Harvard Kennedy School. Crucially, he was the founding director of their program on interstate conflict.
Ah, okay. So his background isn't just economics or law. It's about why states... well, why they fail, why conflicts happen.
Precisely. He spent his career looking at weak and failing states. His book, When States Fail, is a landmark study. So when he looks at corruption, he's not just seeing crime. He sees it as a core systemic pathology.
A disease in the system.
Exactly. A primary driver of state fragility, instability, even collapse. He approaches it like a political diagnostician examining the health of the entire political body.
So he's looking at the conditions that allow the rot to set in, not just counting the rotten apples after the fact.
You've got it. And that's why this book, Anti-Corruption, aims to be more than just analysis. It's designed as an actionable blueprint. He wants to cut through the academic jargon and give policymakers, business leaders, citizens, practical tools for reform.
Right. So how does the book lay this out? What's the structure?
Well, it starts with a diagnosis, as you'd expect. He dissects the anatomy of corruption, defining these complex forms like kleptocracy, state capture, things we'll get into.
And then outlining the damage it does.
Yes, the devastating costs, economic, political, social. But then, crucially, he pivots. He looks at the enabling conditions, things like weak courts, lack of transparency, before landing on his central thesis. That all the laws, all the agencies, all the tech in the world, they're secondary.
Yeah.
They don't work without the one absolute necessity, unwavering and credible political will, right from the very top leadership.
That's the make or break factor then, political will.
It's everything, according to Rodberg. Hmm. The framework he offers isn't rigid, though. It's not a one-size-fits-all fix, but it's built on best practices from places that have actually made progress. It shows it can be done.
Okay, let's dig into those definitions, because corruption can mean a lot of things. Well, Rodberg breaks it down right, starting with the big stuff.
Yeah, he talks about grand corruption. Hmm. This is the really large-scale stuff happening at the highest levels of government. Think huge infrastructure project kickbacks, massive defense contract manipulation, basically kleptocracy, where leaders systematically loot the state.
Right, and then at the other end of the scale.
That's petty corruption. And this is the kind that really grinds down ordinary citizens day to day. Paying a small bribe to a clerk to get a permit faster, or to a police officer to overlook a minor infraction.
The sums might be small individually, but it's pervasive.
Exactly. And it's corrosive. It destroys trust in public institutions, and it disproportionately hurts the poor, who often can't afford even small bribes, or they lose valuable time dealing with it.
But Rodberg highlights another form, one he says is maybe even more dangerous, state capture. That sounds ominous.
It is. State capture isn't just about bribing officials. It's when powerful private interests, you know, big companies or oligarchs, don't just influence policy. They effectively write the rules.
How does that work?
They manage to illicitly shape the state's decision-making processes to benefit themselves exclusively. This could be manipulating regulations, skewing public tenders, getting laws passed that favor them. The state itself becomes a tool for a hidden elite. It often looks legal on the surface, which is part of the danger.
Wow. And the economic fallout from all this?
It's huge. Rotberg describes corruption as a massive hidden tax on the entire economy. Foreign investors get scared off. Local entrepreneurs can't compete if the game is rigged.
So it stifles growth, entrenches inequality.
Absolutely. And it just eats away at the legitimacy of the state.
Mm-hmm.
If people don't trust the courts, the police, the government, why would they follow the rules?
Which brings us to why it flourishes. If it's so damaging, why is it so common? Rotberg points to institutions.
Yes, primarily weak institutions. If the courts aren't independent, if regulators are easily captured or ignored, if oversight bodies have no real power, then the risk of getting caught and punished for corruption is low.
So it becomes a rational calculation, low risk, high reward.
Pretty much. Corruption becomes a rational response within a flawed system. And this is helped along by a lack of transparency, especially around government budgets and big contracts. Secrecy is corruption's best friend.
And you mentioned incentives earlier.
Right. Perverse incentives. The classic example is paying civil servants really low salaries. If they can't make ends meet honestly, the temptation to accept bribes becomes overwhelming. It's systemic pressure.
Okay, so if the system itself creates these pressures and opportunities, the fix has to come from the top, which brings us back to that essential ingredient.
Determined and sustained political will. Rotberg hammers this point home again and again. Every single successful anti-corruption effort he studied had this in common.
But hang on, we hear politicians talk about fighting corruption all the time. It's standard campaign rhetoric. How is this will different? What makes it credible?
That's a great question. Rotberg is clear. It's not about speeches. It's about credible, demonstrable commitment. It means the leader is willing to take on powerful vested interests, even within their own party or inner circle.
Ooh, that's the tough part, going after your allies.
Absolutely. It means leading by example. Things like transparently declaring your own assets, ensuring your family isn't benefiting, and crucially, allowing prosecutors to go after powerful figures no matter who they are. Setting that tone from the top is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
It has to be believable.
Okay, so assuming a leader has that genuine, credible will, what's the plan? What's Rotberg's actionable blueprint?
He proposes a three-pronged approach. First, prevention, making it harder to be corrupt in the first place through institutional reforms. Second, investigation and prosecution, making sure there are real consequences, that punishment is swift and certain.
And the third prong?
Public education. This is about changing social norms over the long term, getting citizens to see corruption not as normal, but as unacceptable. That's vital for sustainability.
And what are the key institutional pillars needed to support this?
You need strong, independent bodies. He highlights the need for an independent anti-corruption agency, ACA. He often cites Hong Kong's ICA as a successful, albeit context-specific, model. Alongside that, a truly independent and effective judiciary.
And someone watching the money.
Yes, an empowered auditor general with the resources and authority to scrutinize public spending properly. These institutions need teeth, and they need protection from political interference.
Now, you mentioned technology earlier. How does that fit into the blueprint?
It's a powerful tool, especially for prevention. E-governance is a big one. Moving government services online, things like applying for licenses, paying taxes.
Ah, so it reduces the face-to-face contact where petty bribes often happen?
Exactly. Cuts out the middleman, makes processes more transparent and standardized. Mm-hmm. And the other big tech piece is open data.
Making government information public.
Precisely. Publishing budgets, procurement contracts, details of company ownership online. Rotberg calls transparency the disinfectant. It allows journalists, civil society groups, and ordinary citizens to follow the money and hold power accountable. Visibility makes corruption much harder to hide.
Okay. If we zoom out a bit, what are the big overarching themes or messages you take away from Rotberg's analysis?
Well, the first one is inescapable. The primacy of political will. It sounds simple, but he argues convincingly that without genuine top-level commitment, all the laws, agencies, and tech are just window dressing. They won't achieve real change.
So it all starts at the top. What else?
Second, this idea that corruption is a system It's not just about a few bad individuals. His famous analogy is, you need to fix the rotten barrel, not just hunt for a few bad apples.
Right. So reform has to focus on changing the incentives, the structures, the opportunities within the system itself, making integrity the easier path.
Exactly. It's about re-engineering the governance environment. And the third theme, which is really powerful, is the devastating link between corruption, poverty, and state failure.
He really frames it as a development issue, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. He argues it's not a side issue you tackle after development happens. It's a direct assault on the state's ability to deliver services, build infrastructure, uphold justice. It actively prevents development and entrenches inequality. So fighting corruption becomes a humanitarian imperative.
And the last key theme.
It has to be the power of transparency. You know, the idea that secrecy is corruption's oxygen. Leveraging open data, supporting a free press, empowering citizens with information. These are essential weapons in the fight. They bring things into the light.
Rauberg really has a way with words, doesn't he? Some very clear, punchy statements that capture these ideas.
He does. They really stick with you. For instance, on the impact, he says, corruption is the single greatest obstacle to economic and social development, acting as a regressive tax on the poor. Really lays bare the human cost.
Yeah. That's powerful. And on the approach to fixing it.
That quote about the barrel. The most effective anti-corruption strategy is not to hunt for a few bad apples, but to fix the rotten barrel. That perfectly sums up the systemic focus.
And then there's that quote about the less visible, but perhaps more damaging type.
Right. The most dangerous corruption is not the bribery that citizens see, but the legal corruption that they don't. The policy capture, regulatory capture, and influence peddling that shape the rules of the game. That highlights the insidious nature of state capture.
So how does this translate into the real world? What are the practical applications for policymakers, say?
Well, the book is essentially a practical blueprint for them. It's a checklist for designing a national strategy. Key advice includes focusing on prevention, like serious civil service reform, paying decent wages to reduce temptation, and avoiding common pitfalls, like creating anti-corruption agencies that look good on paper, but have no real power or independence.
And he gives examples of where this has worked, right, to show it's not just theory.
Yes. And these case studies are crucial for hope. Look at Singapore. Lee Kuan Yew's leadership was famously iron-willed. They combined high civil service pay, making it an attractive and respected career, with absolutely ruthless prosecution of corruption at all levels. They fundamentally changed the norms.
In Georgia, that was more recent.
Georgia, after the Rose Revolution in 2003, used what some call shock therapy. They took incredibly bold steps, like firing the entire traffic police force overnight because it was so notoriously corrupt. That sent a massive signal and helped radically shift the culture very quickly. These examples prove it can be done with courageous leadership.
So what about for us, for citizens? Does this leave us feeling helpless, or is there a role for us?
Definitely not helpless. Rotberg's analysis actually empowers citizens. Instead of just being cynical, you can become informed and engaged. You can demand specific things like a truly independent ACA or more transparency around contracts. And you can use tools like freedom of information laws to, well, follow the money yourself and hold leaders accountable.
That shifts the dynamic from passive observation to active participation.
Exactly. Okay, so as we wrap up, what's one thing that really struck you, maybe surprised you, from digging into Rotberg's work?
For me, it was the emphasis on patience and long-term commitment. You know, we often want quick fixes, especially with something as frustrating as corruption. But Rotberg makes it clear that successful anti-corruption efforts require the same kind of sustained investment and societal patience that we put into, say, building a good education system or healthcare system. It's a generational project, not something you fix in one election cycle.
That's a great point. It needs stamina. What about you?
I think my main takeaway is the sense of pragmatic optimism. The success stories he highlights, Singapore, Botswana, Georgia, they're really important. They demonstrate that this isn't some immutable cultural destiny. Corruption is a governance challenge. It's about systems, incentives, and leadership. And the variable that makes the biggest difference time and again is leadership courage. It shows we're not fighting human nature, we're fighting bad governance. And bad governance can be fixed.
A hopeful note to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.